Welcome to Rights Radio for Homeowners and Pet Owners in Distress. I'm your host, Dr. Joyce Starr, author of Defend Your Condo and Homeowner Rights, and publisher of the first Homeowners Defense Kit. Please visit my websites at starpublications.com, that's STARR Publications with an S dot com, or drjoycestarr.com, JoyceStarr.com, and of course, rightsradio.com. The Homeowner's Defense Kit, which includes my book, is the first link at the top of the left navigation on both sites. We also offer a terrific downloadable book on how to restore your natural vitality while ensuring a long life for your pet. The e-book is called How to Escape the Mad Medicine Bottle Once and for All, and the download also includes an eye-opening audio interview with pet health expert Stephen Becker on what the pet food establishment doesn't want you to know. Look for the link that says Your Vitality Rights on starpublications.com. Now, our topic today is how to help people with a permanent disability enjoy their companion animals, and what you should know about a monthly pet food and supplies food bank, home deliveries of pet food for clients with limited mobility, annual vaccinations for companion animals, and the coordination of various spay, neutering, and vet services. Our guest is Felix De Bruin. Felix is the executive director for the nonprofit Pet Project, that's petproject.org, which promotes and preserves the human-animal bond. The Pet Project is a nonprofit organization. That means 100% of all donations are tax deductible. Hello, Felix. Happy to have you with us today.
Oh, hello, Joyce. Glad to be here.
And I hope that everyone can hear you, so please speak up a bit.
Okay, I'll
Great.
Try.
Okay, Felix, tell me, what do you do at the Pet Project, and what is the mission of the Pet Project?
The Pet Project is all about the human-animal bond, which is that amazing thing that happens between you and your pet. What we do is we help disabled and sick people with pets to take care of their pets because of that. The benefits of pet ownership, it's lengthy and scientifically proven.
Well, the Pet Project is dedicated to doing whatever you can to help. I know that. Can you explain some of the items, the specific things that you do?
We provide a monthly pet food bank for our clients, during which time we also do deliveries. We also help with pet vaccines, except for rabies. We, as I said, we deliver pet food to people with limited mobility or no transportation. We will also refer clients to spay and neuter services, to vet services. We just, in general, do referrals and information to all kinds of pet-related services and help for all our clients, and of course everybody else that has got anything to do with animal services.
This is really phenomenal. I've not heard about it previously. Now, is this in other states or is it only in the state of Florida?
No, it is in other states, although it differs from state to state. It was originally started in San Francisco during the AIDS crisis, where a lot of pet owners, of course, were very sick and were dying. And that was PAWS in San Francisco, PAWS, which was for Pets Are Wonderful Support.
Oh, that's lovely.
That was started in the 1980s.
Uh-huh.
And the same concept was taken across and started in different parts of the U.S. There are some organizations like us in Texas, D.C., Atlanta, other parts of the country, other big cities, Houston.
One network? Are you all networked together somehow?
We do not work together. We do talk to each other, and
mm-hmm.
we get. We basically are not connected at all in any kind of formal sense at all. we all talk to each other and try and find out ways to make things better and happier for everybody.
All right.
Everybody has got their own way.
Mm-hmm.
We started off, as for instance, as an HIV organization, but we changed over when I took over to include all terminal illnesses and disabilities.
How long have you been there?
I've been here since 4 years ago. I took over in 2004. Beginning of 2004. The organization has been around since 2002 here in Florida.
All right. Now, your clients face many potential losses. Can you go into that and explain the benefits of pet ownership for sick or disabled people?
Well, it's proven scientifically about that pet owners need less medicine, they are less prone to depression, get over any kind of loss or medical problems easier and quicker than non-pet owners. It's an immense benefit. It reduces your blood pressure. It releases hormones in your blood when you just stroke a pet. So pet ownership is just phenomenal.
And what have your clients told you? I know you've had some wonderful feedback from them.
They just love it that somebody helps them, because most of them live on a very limited income, and a lot of them would have been forced to give up the pet if they didn't have our help with pet food and vaccines and heartworm and flea medication, which is what we help with. So they receive food and cat litter, treats. The vaccines.
Do you also change the kitty litter?
Actually, we do. If a client has to go to the hospital,
uh-huh.
we will do temporary foster care, and which includes that if a cat, because cats do not travel very well in most cases, that if the cat is at the person's wherever they live, we will go and clean and feed the cats or dogs, but most of the time we try and get foster care parents for the duration of the person's hospital stay. And unfortunately, of course, if a client do pass, we do get into the adoption business to try and find a home for the pet.
Aha, all right. So that's an add-on service, really. Does the current owner have anything to do with that? Do they play a role in that, knowing that they're facing perhaps a terminal illness?
One of the things that we recommend for all our clients is to state in their wills what will happen to the animal. And, of course, we always talk to the client family to try and get them to adopt the animal, because that's always easier, especially for cats. Dogs are a little easier, but cats are very, very difficult to place, especially an older cat.
You know, there's a new organization, I'm sure you're familiar with it, called Rent-A-Pet. That's out of New York. There may be a Rent-A-Pet somewhere else as well. At first, I was quite appalled by it. I'm still not really comfortable with it. I also know that people who pet an animal that is not really theirs don't get the same benefit, if any benefit at all, unless they're in a hospital setting and they're quite isolated and alone.
They do have the hospital.
Right. There they get a benefit, of course. But the idea that the point is that you make it possible for that pet to really be an integral part of their life, not something that comes at 9 in the morning and leaves at 3. It's really there for them when they need it most, at night, I would imagine, to be there in the morning when they wake up.
Absolutely. It's that unconditional love that a pet provides. That's what helps most people the most.
Talk a little bit about the hormonal changes that people go through as they interact with these wonderful pets.
Well, it's been proven that that so-called happy hormone, the serotonin, I'm sorry?
You call it happy hormone?
The happy hormone. The hormone that makes you happy.
Okay.
The pleasure hormone. That increases just, as I said, just stroking a pet and touching a pet and being in the presence of a pet, that increases. They've done studies about that, the serotonin level, what happens with. They found that it doesn't have to be your own pet. It has to be your own pet. It doesn't increase with a strange pet or
something else's
pet.
That's right. That was the study I saw as well.
Yeah, it has to be your own pet, not a stranger.
I noted in your when we were writing to each other that you even stated that it reduces the craving for carbohydrates.
Yes.
The pet diet.
It can do that. It's amazing what it does. Yeah.
Can a dog help mediate serotonin levels in order to help a depressed patient?
Yes, absolutely. That was once again another proven study about the level of depression. It decreases with having a pet.
A dog and a cat or a cat?
The studies did find that a cat has got an increase, but not as much as a dog.
Now, why might
cat
that
owners.
Be? Because dogs are more interactive?
It's cats are, I guess, are a little more standoffish or not so unconditional as a dog.
Mm-hmm.
A dog will just kiss you to death, and a cat will just be like, okay, give me attention. If I have enough, I'll tell you. That's how they are. But they both definitely have an increase, and they both do form a very good help or support.
You mentioned that animal-assisted therapy is still in its infancy, and that was interesting for me as well because I've been reading about animal-assisted therapy for a long time, and I thought it was quite a highly developed field, but apparently it's just beginning from what you mentioned.
I still don't think that especially the state governments or the federal government doesn't even realize the benefits of pet ownership. Because it was until recently not allowed to have pets in government-assisted housing, for instance.
Oh, really?
It's just really sad, because you can keep people healthier and happier by just allowing them to have pets. Controlled, of course. Nuisance pets are always shouldn't be allowed. They have the Fair Housing Act, which was relatively recently passed, which includes pet ownership in non-pet zones. Which means that even if you live in a few disabled and you live in a no pet apartment or complex, you're still allowed to have a companion animal. As long as it's not a nuisance animal, it doesn't have to be a trained animal, it just can be a companion animal.
Right. Maida Genser was on our show 2 weeks ago and she talked about that at length, but it, of course, sometimes it's hard to prove that you have a disability. Some disabilities, of course, what you mentioned to me on the phone is that it requires a doctor's letter or a letter from a professional.
Which could be a therapist.
A therapist of any kind.
Yes.
Professional therapist, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But I mentioned to you that in my own building, for example, a woman who had a serious need for her two little harmless parakeets had that same letter from a doctor thrown back in her face, and there was nothing she could do about it, and actually the condo filed a legal action against her, and even though the law would have been on her side, she didn't know it, her family didn't know it, and she ended up removing the parakeets. The condo board didn't know it either, and they didn't care.
Actually, I'm a little bit sorry to say about that, but as far as the law goes, it is one companion animal only. And they have the general rules and regulations about a nuisance pet, a dog that barks or a very noisy pet. That's still on the side of the condo commandos.
Right, but you mentioned also that it's only one. You just stated now, only one.
It's only one companion animal.
Not two parakeets, five, not ten.
No.
Right.
So, unfortunately, the act only applies to one animal.
Because I do
have
a
dog, don't have two cats.
Okay.
Legally.
So, if you have a dog and a cat and they love each other, only one can stay?
Only one can be, if it's a no-pet complex, of course, yeah.
Okay. And what happened to the rule?
Legally, you're only allowed to have one.
What happened to the rule you mentioned about public housing? Is that still in place?
In most places, it still is that public housing, it's enforced. But I think that was a lot because of them thinking that the pets were, they wouldn't take care of the pets, or the pets would be, or they'd be like hoarded, that kind of thing, with multiple pets. But I think the one pet, what they do is they over compensate and they say no pets rather than saying one pet allowed for disabled and sick people.
Mm-hmm.
Or even for healthy people. I mean, pet ownership applies just as much to healthy people as it does to, but it more so, to, of course, to sick people.
Well, my point when I first spoke to you was that a lot of healthy people may get sick because they don't have a pet or are not allowed to have a pet. They don't have the option. They know they will always be alone if they remain in their condo or other related facility.
Absolutely. We all know that that would benefit them, but it's so difficult to prove in a case like that if they're not actually disabled or can't get a medical professional to tell them, to support them and tell them that, that they require the support of the pet.
You mentioned something in your notes to me about a robotic dog.
Yes, and they have no effect on people at all. It is flesh and blood that, that has the effects, not robotic dogs or any kind of like machinery.
Can you give us some examples of how your work has dramatically changed the life of a disabled person or a terminally ill person? I'm sure you have many stories.
I can tell you a very recent story that I went through. I got a phone call from a lady that is suffering from MS. She's in a wheelchair. She was kind of like desperate. She thought she had to give up her pet because the pet was, she didn't have the money. The pet had mats of hair on him that it was even painful for the pet to walk or to move around, and she couldn't take care of them. She couldn't feed the cat, and she was absolutely in tears by the time she found us. So what I did is I immediately made arrangements to go over to her apartment, number one, to make her a client, because there's an MS client suffering from multiple sclerosis. She qualifies as a client. And so I drove over there with vaccines and food for the cat. I made an appointment to take the cat to a vet to be shaved. Got the cat, got him in my car and drove him to the vet. I had him shaved and took him back to her. And it was just incredible, the absolute joy this woman had, because she was at wit's end, thinking that she was going to be forced to give up the pet. And this pet is her life. It's what makes her live.
Makes her want to get up in the morning.
It absolutely makes her just go. She, otherwise, I don't know how she would survive. She's, as I said, she's in a wheelchair. She's totally not mobile.
And has no family to take care of her?
She has a father, but it doesn't sound like he's doing too much or capable of doing too much. She's on disability. She gets $600 a month.
How
most
do you live like that?
Most of it goes to rent.
Uh-huh.
She can barely afford to buy anything else, and definitely not buy cat litter or cat food or anything like that.
How was she getting it? How was she getting out in order to purchase it? Before she found you,
she didn't. She had to rely on who, whatever she can get from neighbors or help or through. There was no other service that would allow her to help her. We're the only one in southern Florida.
It's terrible.
It is. It's
and the poor animal was suffering as well. Terribly.
The poor animal was so relieved when I got him back from the vet because all of a sudden he could move. He literally was in pain to move because of these clumps of hair that was so tight around his body.
Oh.
That the poor thing was like in pain all the time.
This is another side of what you do, isn't it? This is the forgotten side, because we want to do everything possible for people with disabilities and illnesses to have a pet, but those pets need to be taken care of.
Oh,
they deserve it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And people do need help to take care of the pets when they're disabled or sick. We, of course, being a volunteer organization, mostly a volunteer organization, we get volunteers to help people if they need help with transportation or deliveries or these kind of things. So,
well, how do you find the volunteers?
Well, we basically publicize. We're always at all our events, our fundraising events. We talk to people, get their names, find people that are interested to help us. And we keep a database of all the different kinds of volunteers that we have. And we contact them as we need them. We have some regulars, of course. You always have those that come into the office or come to the pet food banks or come to our fundraising events to help with that, to help us raise funds.
Well, how do the people with a disability or the illness find you?
Well, that's a big challenge. We do work with organizations that have case managers.
Mm-hmm.
So we interface with them and get referrals from them. We get a lot of clients by word of mouth or people that are going to organizations like Lighthouse for the Blind or something like that, and where people talk or they read an article in the local newspaper or something like that. But we definitely try and always get the word out that we exist and that we're here to help people.
I think it's really quite amazing. I mean, you don't turn anybody down, I take it.
If somebody qualifies, we don't turn them down. We do not discriminate against anybody or anything.
And how do you know they qualify? They have to show you a letter or?
No, everybody has to do an application, and we do require documentation for that proof, like doctor's letters, proof of income, the photos of your pets. We might even do a home visit, and we make double sure that somebody does qualify, and we don't want to we don't give away things for just free.
But for the person who can't write for some reason, you know, it might be difficult to write or.
We'll happily go and do an in-person interview right there at their, wherever they live, like I did with the MS client. I went over there. I wrote everything down for her. She just gave me the information. And that's what we would do.
Tell us a few more stories, if you would. Share a few more vignettes of how people's lives have been changed. I think it's so moving.
Oh, let me think. Recently we had a client that gave us a call. She's an elder lady. She found out from us, from a friend of hers. She was living in a trailer that got infected with mold because after the hurricane, she basically just lived in this half-destroyed trailer. And she got sick, and she had two dogs. And we got this call that she's in the hospital, and she needs the two dogs that are at her trailer, and it's with the mold in, and the people told her that the mold is toxic. So we ran up to where she lived, got the two dogs, got them to a groomer to be washed and cleaned up and everything else, got them placed with foster care parents, and while she was recovering in the hospital, and as soon as she was better and she got a different place to live at, we returned the pets to her.
That's wonderful.
That's
wonderful.
We have a lady in Miami that has pets, and she's totally in love with them. She had a stroke recently while she was on a bus, and she didn't have her ID on her. And at last, when she got the census together, she of course contacted whoever. But she is so incredibly grateful for whatever help we can do so that she can keep with the pets. Even after suffering the stroke, she ended up in hospital. Her family finally traced her, and she got home. The pets helped her. She's today walking again, and she's happier than anything else. Just because of the pets. The pets are what make her live. So she's incredibly grateful for us providing the food and the help with her maintenance of the pets.
You're saving a lot of lives.
I hope so.
Really, it's It's very moving, and regardless of where people might be located, if they're listening to this show, it indicates that they could find perhaps not as wonderful, but at least an equivalent service in their state, and they might not have known about it if they hadn't heard your interview. So I hope more people will hear it and be aware of it and look for help in their state. And I guess what you're saying is that if they have any type of disability, they should ask the organization that they interact with most frequently, do we have such an organization in our state? Is that the question that they should ask?
Basically, yes, because most of the organizations that's similar to mine will be talking to caseworkers and to organizations that handle people with disabilities or cancer or organizations or something like that.
What about a temporary illness? Something, as you said, something happens. Maybe it is a stroke, but it the person is able to overcome it very quickly.
Recover. We do actually would cover somebody with something like breast cancer,
mm-hmm.
even though it's not necessarily a fatal terminal disease.
Right.
We still make an exception in a case like that. We do it on a case by case basis. We don't have a hard and fast rule. It really is. Had some just elderly clients, just because they don't have a disability per se, but they're just old and they need help with their pets and the vet care, that we would be taking them on as clients.
Oh, that's amazing.
So we do not, we're very flexible, and let me put it that way. If we find somebody in need, we try and help them.
So really, you go beyond the word disability or terminal illness.
Of course, yes. Mm-hmm. We have to kind of like define rules and regulations, because otherwise you'll be totally swamped by everybody,
right.
and it not necessarily be have such a huge need. So we don't really like advertise it per se, but yes, we do. We make exceptions to everything that we do.
Well, it's a very worthy cause, and we're going to ask you more questions, but I want to just say that if anybody's interested in supporting, it's thepetproject.org.
It's sorry, Joyce. It's petprojectforpets.org.
Oh, sorry, petprojectforpets.org.
Yes.
Okay, great. And but it's called the Pet Project, and it's Pet Project for Pets.
That's it.
And .org, and be generous. Now, I wanted to ask you, what don't you do?
What don't we do? Mm-hmm. There's a few things that we don't do, which is we do not, first of all, currently pay vet bills for people.
Okay.
We do refer people to either agencies that help with vet bills or to local veterinarians that might be better off. For our clients, we do have some vets that give a discount. We also have a vet that actually allow our clients to pay off their vet bill.
Wait, you don't pay the vet bill, but you help them pay it off?
We refer them to vets that will help, will take them and give them a payoff schedule.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but we don't, we say we don't pay it, but of course we always make exceptions. It happens sometimes.
Okay.
We do not provide for anybody that's not registered with us. You have to be a client of ours before we get to provide services.
Right.
Makes sense. We are only limited to 2 pets per person, which also makes sense because we do not want to encourage people to just get pets if you're a sick or a disabled person, because 2 pets are more than sufficient. We do not take support animals to hospitals for sick people. It's their own pets that we only work with. We're not in the adoption business. The only time that we get into the adoption business is when somebody passes, that we will try and find a home for the pet itself. But otherwise, we will not find you a pet, and we do not find homes for pets that you have.
You bring to mind a thought, and that is, what if a person really has a lot of money? Money is not a problem, but what is a problem is finding a service such as yours, because it doesn't exist. It's so rare. They need help. They have the resources. Perhaps they want to pay you. They don't need your assistance.
We do that,
okay.
Absolutely, because besides people not necessarily might not have that much money, but they might not be totally low income.
Mm-hmm.
We will provide services for them, and we will help them, because, as you say, it's so rare to find these kind of services. But we do that.
So they can pay you directly. If they can afford it, they can pay you the same assistance.
The way that we work is because we try and not be a agency that give away everything.
Mm-hmm.
We provide pet food on a sliding scale based on your income and your ability to pay, which means that for most of our clients, it will be that they can get a year's worth of pet food for $20 or less. So it's really nothing, because we subsidize up to 95% of our cost of the pet food. The vaccines and the heartworm and flea medication are free. We just buy that outright. So we
But what if a person has money and the resources and doesn't have to take up a spot from a person who's seriously underfunded? Can they just pay for them at their real value?
We will have somebody that pay our cost.
Okay.
Yes, we do have that, just because a lot of our clients are just in case, because they might be HIV positive and they might not be sick at the moment, but they're worried about their pets if they get sick.
So they have the resources, they're not exactly sick, but they still want you to come and do these things for them?
No. If they're capable of doing things themselves, we will not do that.
Okay.
Absolutely not. That's, a lot of our clients are people that think ahead that they might be coming sick.
Oh.
They have cancer, but they're not sick yet. That kind of thing. So they can apply to become a client, and yes, we will allow them to become a client, but we do not provide them with the dog walking or the foster care or those kind of things as a luxury. And until if they do get sick, then we will get involved and we will provide them the full services.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So people are looking forward, looking ahead in their lives and saying, I might face this situation.
Absolutely.
I'm going to become your client. When they become your client, do they pay a fee to become your client?
No. We do not charge anybody anything to become a client. As I said, all we do is we require documentation that you prove exactly what you are and why you want to become a client.
This is really out of the norm, isn't it? Out of the norm. Very, very moving. How is the pet project funded? Who are the angels in your lives?
Okay, we have a wonderful foundation that pays for our office admin. It's a private foundation, the Robert M. Benedictus Foundation, and they give us a check every single month to pay for the office rent, for the phone, for the printers, for the computers, for the internet, all these kind of things. So every penny that we get through other grants or donations, we apply directly to client services.
Foundation, again, what was the name of it? Because I couldn't hear it exactly.
It's the Robert M. De Benedictus Foundation.
Ah, interesting last name.
De Benedictus, yeah.
Right.
he's a local, very rich man that has this foundation. It's from New York.
Okay.
And he's the one that basically originally started by providing funds for the pet project.
How did he get involved? How did you find him?
I didn't find him. The founder of the Pet Project, a friend of mine, found him, and she created the Pet Project in 2001 and incorporated it in 2002. And she ran it initially until she kind of got burnt out, and that's when I got involved. She was a friend of mine, and I got involved because I developed a database to take everything that was done manually and do it on a computer, because that's my background. I'm a computer consultant by trade. And so when I developed the database and everything else, and she wanted to bow out, and she kind of offered me this part-time job, which of course turned into a full-time job very quickly, because you cannot run an organization like this part-time. It would be absolutely impossible for anybody to make a success of.
Tell us a bit about you, your background.
As I said, I'm a computer consultant. I'm originally from South Africa. I'm a U.S. citizen now. And I've got involved with the PET project because of my computer skills. As I said, I developed a database that does all the calculations and admin for all our clients, which makes it much easier for us to, for instance, make changes to pet food that a client gets. This it calculates how much pet food you should feed a dog or a cat based on its weight, what type of animal it is, what type of food it is, and it creates a schedule so that we can actually schedule the clients to get the pet food.
Let me understand this. You created a software program to do this.
A database, yes.
Well, it's more than a database.
Well, yes, it's got some intelligent programming behind it, yes.
I would say so. That's another first for me, hearing about a program that will actually calculate how much the pet should eat.
I think it's kind of unique in the U.S.
I think it is, and you're being a bit understated about yourself, aren't you?
Well,
you're not just another computer consultant. You're doing something beyond, as I said before, beyond the norm.
Well, I hope to actually work with some people to maybe create a web database that anybody else that wants to start an organization like ours would be able to take, because it reduces the office admin for an organization so much that I can, for instance, add on probably another 100 clients and not get anybody else to come into the office, because my current staff would be able to handle that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't add overhead when we add new clients. It's just the pet foods, the cost of the pet food that increases, and cost of the vaccines and the flu medication hardware. But it doesn't increase the amount of work that we have to do.
Well, you've created a proprietary software.
Yes.
That, as you say, could be used across the country. It would have could have many applications for pets beyond, certainly, for those dealing pets that are part of pet-assisted therapy.
Anybody that does pet adoption services, something like that, or so, because you calculate how much food the a pet is going to need, and you can then apply it to a product database of food where you can work out to get the most economical quantities. You buy bigger bags because it lasts maybe a month or two or three per pet, rather than buying these really small quantities or relying on other things.
How do you determine the type of food that you provide?
Well,
that's a big issue. Pet food, safe food.
What we do is we work with a wholesaler, a pet wholesaler, and we order our pet food through them. So it's basically what they offer that we pick from what we want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we get a client, we tell them that this is what's available, and based on what you were feeding the dog or cat, this is what we recommend that you feed the cat now or the dog now. So we kind of steer them into what we have that's available.
And how do you differentiate, for example, between hard food and soft food? Because that's a very big question today in feeding, especially cats, of course.
It's a client's choice, but we provide both. The way that we do is we have a ratio of hard food to soft food that people get. So if you, based on how much the dog or cat weighs, you say you can get so many cups of dry food per day and so much of a can. So we'll give you so many cans for the week or for 2 months or whatever. We normally work in cases for canned of 24 cans of dog food, 24 cat food, we get in either 12, 24, or 48, or 36.
Mm-hmm.
So we buy basically what's commercially available.
And I understand that you actually served over 360 exactly, and companion animals.
Actually,
for 205 and 27 and 207?
Oh, clients are 200 plus now. And I think we've added since the last count that I did, which was the 200 and something. And definitely, we're getting probably closer to 400 pets at this stage.
Okay.
Because we've been adding clients nonstop.
But amazingly, you've managed to keep your cost rather flat?
Yes. Admin cost has been flat, of course, except for the normal increases that you get via inflation. But we've been keeping our costs down. We've been managing great with what we have, that we get from the foundation and that we get through the grants. Being a non-profit, of course, we spend what we get. So... And but we're in the black. We don't go into any kind of debt or have any problem or have to turn any clients away at this stage.
Let's give people a number that they can call. Do you want to share that with everybody?
Absolutely. Our office number is very easy. It's area code 954-568-5678. That's 954-568-5678. And our office hours are Monday through Thursday from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m., although you can leave a message at any time. And, of course, our website, which is petprojectforpets.org, and that has links to everything. You can donate money through our website, too. You can send us a check. I can give you our address. It's 1164 East Oakland Park Boulevard, and that's in... Suite 308 and Oakland Park in Florida, and the zip is 33334.
Excellent. And you require that the pet has to be sprayed or neutered, I understand.
Yes, that's one of the requirements that we do have. The only exceptions that we have is it's a purebred animal, or if the animal is old and or a vet has got a problem with spay or neutering the pet. But otherwise, we will refer you to a no-cost or a low-cost spay or neuter service.
You've just said something very interesting, and that is that if the pet is old, you will not require various services. Does that include the annual pet vaccine, baby shot, etc.? Can they get away without that?
Actually, the annual vaccines is quite a touchy subject with me. Because the vets would love you to believe that it's annual vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know whether you've had any other programs about this, that the latest kind of like studies and everything, they haven't really done too much studies about the vaccines, how long the vaccines are active for and how long it actually lasts in the body of the animal. But the newer vets are being told that 3 years for the so-called annual vaccines. But even that is not really proven. And if you think of yourself, if you get a vaccine, how long does that last?
Well, that's why my ears perked up when you said that. I thought that was a very important contribution to the type of message that we want to convey on Rights Radio. And this
yes.
is an eye-opener and a very important topic, and you know, specifically, how often do you vaccinate your pets, and how dangerous can it become?
It's amazing how I believe people over-vaccinate their pets tremendously because they believe the vet who's out there to make a lot of money from every little vaccine that he does. That,
well, they're told by their vets that they have to. For example, the vet that I had been using in my city would not perform any additional services on my cat unless all of those vaccinations were up to date.
They do that everywhere they go. It's in the interest of the county to have these regulations, have your pets vaccinated before you can take it to a pet park, all these kind of things. But currently, according to them, annually, but it really is you over-vaccinate the pets. I personally recommend that my pets, our pets only get vaccines every 3 years, but it's up to the owner. Of course, we give that basically free. But so if the owner insists on getting the vaccines, we'll do the vaccines. But I recommend that they don't.
But you bring up an important issue, and that is the relationship between those types of services and government, whether city, local, national, etc.,
mm-hmm.
and the sense that most pet owners have that these are requirements based on experience, studies, research, the FDA of pets, you know, and in fact, it doesn't exist. And
it's so not true.
Yeah, so talk about that, please, a bit more.
There's a wonderful book out, the Old Country Vet.
Mm-hmm.
You can search on the web, Google it, Old Country Vet, web, Old Country Vet, sorry. And what he wrote a book about all these fallacies that exist about, for instance, heartworm, the services that vets perform, vaccines, all these kind of things that people are being overcharged for, and it's so unnecessary.
And it's killing the pets.
And it's killing the pet. There's so many things that they've shown, all these cancers that the pets are getting. A lot of that is directly related to vaccines. Now, of course, you will never hear that because the vets don't want you to hear that.
Well, actually, at the beginning of this show, I mentioned the book How to, you know, Protect Yourself from the Mad Medicine Bottle, How to Stop Using That Mad Medicine Bottle. And the author was one of my first interviewees, and he spent an hour talking about pet health and what your pet should eat and not eat and about vaccinations, etc. And it's a wonderful interview and a terrific book for pet mom, dad, and for them, I mean, for themselves, because it's about your own vitality, but all the same rules apply to your pet.
Exactly, yes.
Everything applies. How to escape the mad medicine bottle.
If you really just think about it logically, why is your pet so different from you? Why is the vaccines that you get so terribly different from the pet's vaccines? Why is it that a pet has to get vaccinated every year? Since when do you get a booster shot every year for every single vaccine that you've had? They do say, they believe that some of the vaccines probably last the lifetime of a dog or a cat. So
if they last a lifetime and then they're getting it every year or even every 3 years, then all those vaccines are just accumulating in their little tiny bodies with no place to go except to make them sick.
Yes. I believe so myself. I mean, that's just what logic tells me.
Do you find that most of the support animals you're dealing with are young or very old? Are they in between?
Totally varied. There's no rule about it. It's really from small little animals to massive big dogs. So it's really absolutely everything.
But no fish.
No fish.
No birds. No reptiles.
We don't recommend birds to people. There's a few reasons why. Smaller birds, first of all, I don't think can be really a pet per se. Secondly, they do have some disease problems, especially for people with immune systems that's not too great. And thirdly, for the bigger birds, the parrots, they're going to probably outlive the sick person. So that's one of the reasons why we don't recommend birds. Reptiles, I just can't imagine a reptile being a kind of a support animal. Same thing for fish.
No, a snake is not a healthy animal to have in your home.
No.
Or a monkey.
Or rodents, no.
Okay.
No, definitely not.
Now, if somebody wants to volunteer, again, it's the same number, 954-568-5678. During those hours of 10 to 3, Monday through Thursday.
Yes.
Correct? And they can leave a message or go to the website. I just want to mention that in case we have some eager volunteers out there. Now, we have about 5 minutes left, and I would like to get your thoughts about what might be done across the nation from the government point of view, from local government, state, national. What types of laws or rules or changes do we need?
I do believe that they should really allow anybody that owns a condo or a house to own pets. That's number one. They should very much loosen up the regulations that they senseless regulations they have about pet ownership in government-sponsored accommodations. And another thing that I really believe is we really need to get to the root of a lot of our problems with pets, which is spay and neuter. We have to concentrate on that, and we have to start passing some regulations about forcing people to be responsible about getting puppies and kittens brought into this country to be destroyed. That's something that I really feel strongly about. Pets need to be spayed or neutered. We do not need more abandoned puppies or kittens. We don't need more feral cats, nothing like that.
In other words, bring down the cost so people can afford it.
Exactly.
Or make it a free service.
Exactly. But if you make it an acquired service, it's going to be bringing down the cost because everybody has to do it, and it's like everything else. If you mass produce or mass enforce anything, the cost goes down. And so spay and neutering will become more affordable, and it will become the norm.
And what other types of changes would you like to see? I mean, is there something, a new organization is needed, something that isn't there right now? Because what you're talking about are so many different pieces of the puzzle, and I don't see where they fit together, because there's the FDA for drugs, every drug you can imagine down your throat, but there's no FDA for pets.
Unfortunately, we do not have anything like that. We still abuse our farm animals. It should be ethics for animals. There's nothing that's in the government or any real kind of regulations about that.
Right.
It's sad, but it's true.
Is there such an organization in any other country that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of, no. It's even worse in some other parts of the world that I've been to, where pets really are even more horribly treated than they are treated here.
I heard the other day about a Scandinavian country that passed, I believe, a law protecting the right of plants as human forms of sorts. I don't know if you heard about that.
No, I haven't.
Rather ironic that they passed a law protecting plants but not animals.
Yeah. I'm sure that was a knee-jerk reaction to some stupid kind of like GM experiment or something like that.
Have you had a good feedback and support from the Florida government of any kind?
No. Actually, we had a pretty sad Florida government before the current governor. They had virtually no support for anything beside business. Business was the king and nothing else.
And now?
No arts, no. The current governor is a lot better. Of course, there's still a lot of room for a lot of improvement. We're not in any which way at all supported by government or by
right.
any kind of federal or money or anything like that, government money. And we all private donations, private support, private grants, all of that. So I don't have to answer to a government, luckily.
So perhaps that's a good thing. But it would be nice if they wanted to help you.
I think it would be really nice, super nice, if the government actually get involved, because I don't think they really realize what the actual benefit of responsible pet ownership is.
No, I don't think so. I think it's outside the sphere.
Make people healthier, less medicine, less doctor visits, less all these other kind of things, happier people, happier citizens.
Well, you're definitely a leader in a very important area. And now I think it's time to come to the end of our show. I want to thank you so much, Felix, for joining us today. It's been absolutely riveting to hear from you and talk to you about this very important topic. And it's really been a genuine pleasure. I've enjoyed having you on the show. So thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm Dr. Joyce Starr. This is Rights Radio for homeowners and pet owners in distress. And even if you're not in distress, this radio channel is for you. And also please visit my website at starpublications.com or drjoycestarr.com and join us again on the next Rights Radio program in 2 weeks where we are broadcasting the first and third Wednesday of every month right now. We look forward to having you with us and back with us for each show. So thank you very much, and signing off for RightsRadio.com.